So what we're going to be exploring is the alchemy of the heart. Sure, quite like that phrase. Alchemy of the heart, transforming poison into wisdom. So what we're going to do this evening is I'm just going to sort of introduce that, as it were. So I'll talk for a bit, and then we'll break into little groups, and I'll ask you some questions, and you can see what we've made of what I've said. And then over the following months, we'll look at a subsection in more detail. Yeah. So alchemy of the heart, transforming poison into wisdom. So I suppose where do you start with that? We start where Buddhism starts in a lot of senses, with a simple observation that we have poison, whatever poison means. So poison, you could say, is experience we don't like, difficulty, pain. It's not just pain, it's sort of pain and then what we do with it. So you could say the simple fact is that we want things to be different. Yeah, we want things to be different from what they are. That is totally human, completely understandable. In fact, the very force which creates so much good in our world, the desire for things to be different is what results in the discovery of electricity, the building of floors, the learning of yoga, meditation, making iPhones, all of it. That all comes from the desire for things to be different. But also, there's that desire for things to be different, whilst being a completely, like an innately human drive, not even just an innately human drive, living beings. Living beings have got this constant movement, this movement to happiness, to fulfillment. And the reason we're here is because something goes wrong. It doesn't work, If we wanted to be happy, and we could just be like, oh, I want to be happy, bing, we were, well, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't need Buddhism. We wouldn't need meditation, because there wouldn't be a problem to fix. So it's not just for the desire for happiness and well-being. It's the fact that that isn't a straightforward desire. It doesn't unfold smoothly. We do experience pain and difficulty. That is human as well. That's what it is to be a living being. We experience pain and difficulty, and we desire growth and fulfillment. That is what it is to be a human being, to be a living being. I suppose particularly the term poison. Poison's quite strong, isn't it? You say poison, and it's not, poison isn't just, pain, discomfort. Poison is kind of like, I don't know about you, but it's kind of like, it's heavy, it's nasty. Something nasty, nasty about it. And that is, where does that come from? Well, that comes from the fact that, pain is, pain, difficulty, discomfort. Well, then we can, the way we respond to that can make it worse. Like a lot of you'll be sitting here thinking, this is in a sense basic Buddhism, so this will not be new to you, but Buddhism starts there for a reason. So we have this experience of being alive. We want to be happy. We seek pleasure. We experience pain. Sometimes we experience pleasure. Sometimes we experience pain. Sometimes when we experience pain, the way we respond to that, the way we deal with that, makes the pain worse. It exacerbates it. It's like if you imagine, just change the metaphor a bit. When we cut ourselves, sometimes that cut can get infected, can get diseased. And that's what the poison is. It's like, we have pain, which is just part of being alive, but then it can get kind of sticky, messy, and that makes it worse. And it doesn't have to be like that. How we respond to our experience makes all the difference. That is what, in fact, that is what wisdom is. That is all Buddhism is a set of suggestions, a set of observations about how we respond to life. Yeah, set of suggestions. So for me, something I'm particularly interested in, a particular way in which the disease, the infection can manifest. Something I'm very interested in at the moment is the desire for the quick fix. The desire for drugs, basically drugs, not in a recreational sense, but in a broader sense. So like, to stick with that image. So we experience pain. We have some kind of disease. And the strength to which we just want it to go away. We want a drug. We want something to make it stop, right here, right now. Give me the pill. Give me the magic bullet. Make it go away. Maybe you don't experience that so strongly. Maybe you're not aware of it. But it seems to me that's a decisive feature of our culture. The belief that we can make things go away. We can change our experience instantaneously. And that actually kind of makes things worse, because then we feel frustrated. It's like, why does this hurt? And why won't it just go away? Why won't it stop right now? And why won't things be different right now? I was talking about this recently, I was saying, is that true? And in the situation I was talking about it, one of the women there works in medicine, and she was saying, oh no, it's absolutely true. She said she works in a medical environment, and again people come to her and they just want something to make them not sick, and particularly their children not sick. It's like, just make it go away. And she's saying to them, it's not like that. Things take time, and sometimes things happen and we can't make it go away. But this kind of deep belief that it's like, just make it go away. I don't want it. And unfortunately, life is not like that. A shame, pain, it's sad that it is. And I suppose, and it is worth saying, we all have that. The one I have it with most prominently is physical health. I have a certain level of chronic ill health, chronic physical conditions. And I just notice again and again and again, I just want someone to give me a drug to make me well and healthy. And like, I go to the doctors and they say, what you need to do is improve your basic level of fitness. And I'm like, I don't want that. Go away. Give me the drug. Give me the injection. Give me the drug. Make this experience different. And they're like, it's not like that. You just need to improve your basic level of health and get more exercise and eat a healthy diet. Really pisses me off. But I didn't order that. I didn't want that. I want this experience to be gone. And they're like, can't do it, mate. It's very frustrating. But that's what, in a way, that's what we're addressing. That's what, to move on. So that's what, alchemy. I find alchemy a very interesting image, a very interesting concept. So alchemy is the transformation of states, the transformation of experience. And in a way, the crucial thing to say about that is that it's a process. Yeah, it's a process of transformation. Alchemy, you take one experience over time. You take one experience and through the way you relate to it, through the conditions you place it in, it unfolds, it grows, it transforms. Yeah, so it's alchemy, it's a transformation, it's a process. It's funny, like I was thinking about it earlier, it's like it's organic, it's a growing thing. Yeah, so just like with the drug, there's no quick fix. You can't just go, it's like, oh no, it takes time, it unfolds over time. It can't be short-circuited. Oops, that's all right. Yeah, so alchemy, it's a process, it's a transformation. And that's what we have to do. We have, the poison, the discomfort, the difficulty we experience in our lives. Well, we've got, obviously we've always got a choice. We can do what you want. But actually what the Buddha's suggesting is that if we want to be happy and well, we have to transform, we have to engage with those experiences in an alchemical way. We have to bring about their transformation. And the most important thing to say about that is that it's the process of alchemy is counterintuitive. It's counterintuitive. And the counterintuitive nature of it is that when we want something to not happen, we want to get rid of it. It's like, go away. Pain, difficulty, discomfort, go away. Come here no more. Bah, get out of here. And what the Buddha says is actually pushing it away exacerbates it, makes it worse, deepens, heightens it. We need to relate to our experience in a different way. Well, we can relate to our experience in a different way. We have a choice to relate to our experience in a different way. So that the different way, the alchemy occurs through an honest recognition of our experience and a turning towards it, an engagement with. So pain, poison, the Buddhist tradition does lists that out. We'll come back to that in a little bit. But in the short term, it's like, well, that, you know, you all have some sense of that in your lives. Like we all have aspects of our experience which we don't like, that we find difficult. So yeah, pain, it might be physical, it might be, you know, health condition of some kind, it might be emotional, we experience fear, grief, despair. Modern psychologists identify those as kind of root emotional experiences, difficult emotional experiences. It might just be existential, this sense of like a sense of discomfort or discontent with being alive. It might just be that simple, the simple desire to be loved and to be wanted. Yeah, that feeling of being incomplete and just kind of that desperate longing to be all right, to be told that we're loved and we're wanted. All of those things can be painful. We can experience as poison, kind of going through our bodies and our lives, kind of corrupting, colouring our experience. Yeah, so this pain, this poison. What the Buddha is inviting us to do is to first of all recognize and acknowledge that, and then turn towards it. And that turning towards, well, you already, like, hallelujah, you already know how to do that. It's the metta bhavana, it's the mindfulness of breathing, it's being present and aware of our experience. So it's not like it's some special gimmick where, you know, you have to come to all six sessions, and on the last session we'll tell you the magic trick to make it work. Because that's the quick fix again. It's just this, you know what to do. It's just remembering again and again that we've got the choice, that we can do that. So what's, in a sense, what I find crucial in all this is... Well, is a certain level of self-metta. Metta meaning love, positive regard. So the funny thing about self-metta is that we can feel like we haven't got any of it, and actually that in itself can be a poison. We can be sitting there going, God, I don't have any self-metta. Like I remember the first time I did the metta bhavana. It's 15 years ago. 14 or 15 years ago. In a month's time, I remember how painful that experience was. I remember somebody sitting me down and saying, close your eyes and say to yourself, may I be well, may I be happy, may I be free from suffering, may I progress. And I remember the degree to which I did not believe that was true, and the utter absence in my experience of believing that. I still remember the image that I had for that experience. I remember it felt like somebody was telling me to start a fire, you know, the fire of love, for like the warm fire of love in my heart. I was being invited to do that, and I felt like I was in a massive storm at sea on a tiny raft, which was one thin bit of wood, and I had two tiny twigs, and somebody was telling me to start a fire, and you're just like, forget it, it's impossible, can't do it. And sometimes that's quite an extreme image. Maybe some of you will relate to that, maybe some of you won't. If you don't, well, good. So in some ways, well, what is the basis of self-metta? What is it, actually? And in a sense, it's very, very simple. It's the basis of self-metta. It's a simple observation that we are all human beings, and that human beings are capable of experiencing happiness and fulfillment. You could say that's our inheritance, and that we're worthy of that. No matter how much or little we feel it in any one moment, we're all capable of finding fulfillment and happiness and well-being, and we all deserve that. There's nothing wrong with any of us. We can all meet that, fulfill that. You know, we are worth it, to put it more colloquially. We are worthy of love. And actually, just for inhabiting that belief, that's the start of self-metta. And we need that. We need that kind of just that like that little first little green shoot of it is, you know, I'm a human being, and I am therefore valid, and I am therefore equal and no different from any other human being on this planet, and we're all worthy and deserving of love. That's crucial, that little first seed, because that's what we need to be able to turn towards difficulty and, you know, pain and poison. If we didn't think that we could do that, then the pain, difficulty, poison would just be overwhelming, would just be unbearable. Which sometimes it is, of course. But nonetheless, that little reminder, it's, oh yeah, but I can turn towards this. This can transform. Yeah. And as I say, this transformation, it's not magic, it's not, well, it is, it's funny, it is both magical and not magical. But it's very simple. It's the simple being with our experience as it arises and passes away. Another image I quite like is leaning in, being with. And that is very simple, actually. One of the things I found last year at a Yob's night, somebody said something which I found really, really useful. We're talking about doing the metta bhavana, and this girl said that she struggled with the metta bhavana, and she found a way of engaging with it. Well, what she did was she, for each of the individual people, she'd just imagine being with them when they're ill. Yeah, and you know that, you know, when you're with somebody when they're ill, it's like in some ways all the crap kind of falls away, and particularly when they're kind of like that ill, and all you can do is just sit there and be with them, you know, just that kind of that presence alongside them. I don't know if you've ever had that kind of illness, where it's like, it's sort of, you know, when you're just like, you know, you've got all the medicine, it's just doing its course, there's sort of like, there's nothing that can be done actually, just being there with them. The other, if you haven't had that sort of ill, the other equivalent is like when you've drunk too much beer and you're just throwing up, and you know, you're just like, you know, and it's like, there's nothing, you just need to throw up and feel crap. And all your mate can do is bring you a glass of water, and kind of maybe they just sit next to you for a bit, kind of like being there with you. It's like, there's nothing they can do, you know, you've just drunk too much and you're throwing up. There's nothing wrong with you, it's just going to pass. But that sense of being with, like being there with them. So that's what I mean when we talk about this, you know, this radical transformation of just being with our experience. And the important thing about that is that, and this is why practicing Buddhism is really subtle and really difficult. Because it's like, if you remember where I started off saying, it's like, well, we experience, you know, there's aspects of our experience which we don't like, that we find painful, difficult. You know, like, I don't want to state what that is for you, but in a sense, well, you wouldn't be here if you didn't have that to some extent, because that's what, well, all human beings have that. So we're saying, well, we have painful and difficult experience, and we can transform that. We can transform that into wisdom. But actually, but you can't make it go away. It has to transform organically. And now I'm saying to you that the way to transform that organically is to be with the experience. So if you're anything like me, your mind does this like little shortcut. You're like, right, so you're telling me I have to be with it to make it go away. So you're like, right, I'm being with you. Have you gone yet? It's like, in a sense, well, that's completely understandable. Like, I still do that. But in some way, For wisdom is deeper than that, in a mysterious kind of way. So what for? So how, you know, the transformation of poison into wisdom? Well, what's the, how does it transform into wisdom? Well, wisdom is lived. I suppose that's the thing when I was thinking about this. Wisdom is lived. It's not an idea. You can't read wisdom in a book. Yeah, the only way we come to wisdom is through experience. It's not a concept. In a sense, it has to be earned. Wisdom, we have to live into wisdom. And that, in part, involves a journey, involves overcoming. We have to, you know, we have to go on a journey. I think it's really true, something Matt said earlier. I think it's really, really true, actually. Courage is not the absence of fear. Just to focus on one example for a moment. Courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is the experiencing of fear and acknowledging and relating to it differently. Yeah, I think that's really, really important. Brave people don't have an absence of fear, but they relate to it differently. They acknowledge it. They say, oh yeah, hello fear. I know you, I recognize you. But you're not going to dominate me. You're not going to control me. You're not going to stop me living my life fully. And in some ways, actually, that relationship, that coming back to that experience of fear, acknowledging, recognizing it, and doing something different, that in itself, that is what courage is. So that's one example, but I think you can apply that to other examples as well. It's like actually, you know, the experiencing of, you know, experience and then not pushing it away, not turning away from it, but actually living it and learning from it and coming into a different relationship with it. That's the alchemy. That's what transforms it into wisdom. So the thing about transformation is that, well, we're living beings. We're beings that are in process. We're continuously unfolding. New things arise and pass away, arise and pass away. So that means that transformation happens again and again and again. Yeah? Again and again and again. We experience states and we, in every moment, we have a choice how we respond to our experience. And sometimes we respond to it creatively, unfoldingly. We bring wisdom and kindness and presence to it. And that, you know, that goes well, whatever well means. Other times we experience states and we don't do so well. You know, I have it. You know, I have that. I get, you know, I have these situations I get into and we have this experience and we just respond to it. And it's not like it's bad or wrong. It's just like we could respond more creatively with greater kindness to ourselves and other people. One of the ones I'm trying to work on at the moment, I have a friend who I just realise that I start these conversations with him and I'm kind of like a bit sharp and in a certain sense a bit patronising. You know, like I think I know the answers better than he does. So you know that thing when somebody's saying something, you're kind of a bit bored and you kind of finish their sentence because you're like, whatever you've got to say, I thought about it already and actually I've got a better line than you. And it's like, I just noticed, I had one of these conversations with him this week. And I was just like, it's not very satisfying, it's uncomfortable. And I'm just like, oh, how? That's what I was thinking about in this meditation, the Metta Bhavana we were doing earlier. It's like, how can I be more creative in my relationship with him? What can I do differently so that that's more satisfying for me and for him? So yes, we have to do it again and again and again. Kind of these experiences arise and how we respond to them. And also, we can experience, well, revolution, transformation. You know, it is possible. I remember having this conversation a few years ago now about, you know, can people really change? Does this actually work? And I remember thinking about, talking about it with a bunch of friends, and this particular, I used to experience a particular kind of isolation. You know that isolation is a very common experience. It's, you know, like that feeling when you're kind of like the universe caves in and you're surrounded by this like membrane which kind of completely surrounds you. So I was, you know, this experience of being completely cut off from everything, completely isolated. God, that was really painful. And you'd have this sense, it's like, I just need to break through it. I just need to, like, if you just pop that membrane, then suddenly you realise that this isn't everything that life is, because there's a whole universe out there. And it just occurred to me during this conversation, but I haven't had that experience of complete isolation. I haven't had that experience for years now. You know, it used to be one of my, like, core painful experiences. And it's like, I haven't had that for years. Hurrah! So transformation is possible. Revolution is possible. So both are true. You know, we have this experience of pain, of difficulty, of discomfort. We impact around that, we exacerbate it, it turns into poison, into disease, into infection. We can work magic, we can perform alchemy, we can transform that experience by being with it, by turning towards it, by seeing that actually, in a certain sense, I suppose this is a point which I haven't quite drawn out properly, it's that actually, that is the material that gets transformed into wisdom. It's really important to say that, actually. It's like, pain isn't getting it wrong. We are not getting life wrong if we experience pain or discomfort. That's the way life is. And how we relate to that can turn into riches. So what do we transform? What do we transform? What are some of the poisons, the infections that we can experience? And what wisdoms can they become? So there's loads of different ways of thinking about this. So I'm just going to give you one version, one Buddhist list. Buddhism loves lists. So I'm going to give you one list, which is what we're going to go through over the coming months. So just to say a few words about it. So... well, we can experience hatred. They're quite strong terms, so yeah, don't worry about that. Hatred, that sort of... I was thinking about hatred basically is like blaming, you know, like hatred when it comes down to it, it's like, I don't like this and it's your fault. That's the root of hatred. It's like, it's them, it's this, it's that. And that is transformed into the mirror-like wisdom, and the mirror just... in a way, it's quite challenging. It just holds a mirror up to us and it shows us the nature of reality. And that can liberate that energy, because we just say, oh, it's, you know, like it's my mind pushing away. And I don't have to push away. I can just be clean, serene. We can experience conceit. Conceit is like, you know, if hatred is blaming the world, conceit is thinking that we're better than everyone else. It's like, it's all about me. I'm the best. And of course, conceit is a very lonely and vulnerable position. If we think we're better than everyone else, well, we're constantly worried about getting knocked off of our perch, being shown up, being seen through. I have that very strongly, I remember. And that can transform into the wisdom of equality. Just seeing that everyone, you know, there's beauty and humanity and goodness in everyone. Greed. Greed is kind of like... this is the opposite of hatred. So if hatred is sort of saying that's the fault, that's where the problem is. Greed is the belief that we can get something and put it into us, and that will make everything all right. It's like, if I only got him, her, this, that, you know, the iPhone 7, then life would be okay. And the wisdom that transforms into love, appreciation, discriminating wisdom, seeing the individual value and beauty in every aspect of reality. Envy can kind of competitiveness, kind of like, that feeling. It's like, Is my phone better or not than yours? Is my girlfriend prettier or not than you? Did I do this better or not than you? We get envy again. It's just very, very separating, but also it blocks energy, because if you're envious, competitiveness, you're scared to try, because what happens if you get shown up? And that transforms into the all-accomplishing wisdom, which just sees possibility, just acts spontaneously, and clearly and confidently, because it doesn't It's not bothered. It's not comparing. It just does. It just does. And delusion. Delusion that just that. Not seeing clearly. You know, in a way we could see delusion is the root. That lack of clarity about the nature of reality. The basic belief that you and I are separate. Which is the source of, well, all pain and confusion and discomfort. That belief in separateness, which is what creates the painful experience of the world. And that transforms into the wisdom of the Dharmadhatu. The wisdom of the Dharmadhatu is for sort of like it's the sun which just shines and sees everything in the same light. Everything is it's not just seeing everything as the same light, it's saying that everything is made up of the same thing. The wisdom of suchness. It's the wisdom that sees that actually from a dodgy physics point of view, you know, we are all stardust. You know, the entire universe is whatever, you know, like stardust, dark matter, whatever is, I'm rubbish at physics. But it's like, yeah, that sense, it's like everything is just made up, everything is just stuff, suchness, and that is the same. And that just realizing that is just really liberating. Because we're not separated anymore. So that's a whirlwind tour of transforming poison into wisdom. The sense of, well, the simple observation that, you know, we experience pain and separation, and that is human. But then that is human and natural. We experience discomfort and we want it to be different. That is human. But then that discomfort, we toxify it. It transforms into poison. And that's just human as well. That's not your fault. We just do it. We can't help it. But we can relate to that experience differently. We can turn towards it with metta and mindfulness. And through doing that, it can be transformed into wisdom. The energy, that energy can become something bright, something beautiful, something we contribute to the world.